What they say, what I've heard people say, is that when you're learning how to break, breaking is a really difficult dance form to learn. And as you learn it, as you put the time into it, you're basically creating a gift that you're giving to the circle, you know, and everyone brings forth their gift, almost like a potluck, you know, everybody's got their dish to bring forward, you know, and regardless of how simple or how, you know, extravagant the dish may be, it's something that everybody shares and appreciates, you know, just the fact that you took the time to create it and bring it to the table, you know, so it's another version of language.
Greetings, everyone. My name is Alfredo González Valenzuela, and you are now at the Climate Frontline. Good morning, afternoon, evening, wherever you may be. My name is Alfredo, and you are now at the Climate Frontline podcast. Oftentimes, I think here in the U.S., people like to talk about their work as means of it being really their whole life. And for me, that's just not the case. I have a whole other life besides just work. However, in this case, this story that I wanted to share with you is one that really provided me an opportunity to engage with youth in a way that's going to transform the way we engage the public on waste management. And it's a story of seeing this gentleman walk into a room, and he started to teach us how to dance. And I think that was the moment that I said, okay, I gotta be working with this guy. This guy knows what's up. He is authentic. He's communicating a message that's gonna resonate with the people. And it breaks barriers of language. It breaks barriers of anything that you want barriers to be. And so I'm just really happy to have my friend Carlos Chavez here at the show. Welcome to the show, Carlos.
Thank you. I appreciate you inviting me. I'm excited to have this conversation today.
Yeah. Carlos, share a little bit about who you are and what is it that you like to do.
My name is Carlos Chavez. I run a youth organization called Morpheus Youth Project. And then, but I'm also an artist, you know, on my own. I like to do graffiti art. I also break dance, or, you know, I break. Break dance is actually kind of a commercialized term. So we call it breaking or b-boying or b-girling. But more so nowadays, I focus a little bit more on rocking, which is like the original form. It was like the precursor to breaking. And the reason for that is, you know, as you get a little bit older and a lot of the breaking moves get, I mean, these kids are elevating that dance form in ways that are just like, I see them doing stuff and I'm just like, I there's no way in hell I'm trying that move, you know? So even though I've got some foundation, they're just pulling off some stuff that it's just phenomenal. So I'm sticking more with like the groove end of it, you know? And so I notice a lot of the older breakers, they're starting to do that now too. So we tend to, when we click up, you know, we do that and we kind of have fun with that, you know? So rocking is more of like the, some people have called it up rocking, but rocking actually influenced so many forms of dance, club hip hop style of club dance, like Roger Rabbit. And, you know, I don't know if you remember during the late 80s and early 90s, there was a lot of like hip hop related dance forms that were coming out, but even stuff like popping and tutting and I would say most definitely, well, of course, breaking, but also stuff like locking, you know, the wrist rolls, you know, I'm not good at, you know, I can't lock, but it's a lot of that. And that wrist roll actually came from rocking, you know, it's a move that's done with rocking, and it was done to simulate like a butterfly knife, because it looks like a battle dance, you know? And so during the dance, you know, you dance in front of each other, but you pretend like you're having a fight with somebody, and, or, you know, it doesn't always have to be that way, but sometimes it's more just kind of fun interaction. But sometimes, you know, when you're battling, you pretend like you're pulling out a knife. And so folks would do a wrist roll to pull out, you know, like to pretend that they're undoing their butterfly knife, and then they're going to get you with the knife, you know? So it's there's some stuff like that, but yeah, it's just a fun form of dance, and it's a good, really good way to kind of get your musicality going, you know? So that's a lot of fun. And then graffiti is something that I've been focusing a lot of time on more recently, which is funny because I'm sure you guys are aware of the protests that have been going on in Portland. The downtown, a lot of the buildings, the windows.
Lots of graffiti everywhere, man.
Oh yeah, graffiti everywhere. Well, and I think what they've been trying to do is they've been trying to counter some of the graffiti by having artists come out and paint panels that they've been putting up. So what a lot of the buildings that have had their windows broken,
yeah,
they've put up, you know, boarded up all the windows. And the World Trade Center, the entire, that was all windows down, you know, at the bottom, and that completely got smashed out. So they had reached out to us to do an art project with them, and they had it was pretty exciting because they reached out and they had a 130-foot wall that they wanted us to do. It was 130 feet by about 10 to 12 feet, depending on where you were at the wall. Yeah. So it gave us a lot of room to work on a project. So I put together, I told him, I said, well, this is going to be in the heart of downtown, just a block away from where a lot of the stuff's been going on. A lot of the protests have been going on.
What an opportunity, man. That sounds exciting.
I said, I'm going to do this for two reasons. You know, for one reason, I'm trying to get more artists of color out there and get commissions to, you know, to do projects like this, because what I'm noticing is within the city of Portland, artists of color are getting squeezed out of those opportunities. Mm-hmm. And so for a number of reasons. And so, so I've been really pushing to try and get more artists of color out there because there's a lot of talent in that arena and they're not getting any shine.
Yeah. So
as a kid, I used to, you know, I never really got down with cans. You know, if we ever had an opportunity, we'd find some cans in the garage or something like that. Of course we, you know, tried to make a little mark, you know, but we never knew what we were doing, you know. And it wasn't until actually later, when I started my organization, that one of the graffiti artists that I work with started to teach me the foundations of doing the lettering, you know, and doing the lettering style. I already knew quite a bit about color, and how, like, what to kind of incorporate. And I was already pretty solid with doing characters and just drawing in general, because that was something that I was pretty good with when I was younger, but I've more recently been getting a letter style down, you know. And so, I mean, you can see some of the stuff behind me, like that's stuff that I've done.
I'm curious to know, Carlos, one thing I ask folks when they come into the show is what your favorite food is.
My favorite food? Oh, see, that's like the hardest question for me, man, because I'm a foodie. So it kind of depends on where I'm at and what's like, what season it is and all that. But I would say, I mean, one of my favorite foods to cook is Mexican food. I love to cook Mexican food, and I like to, and Puerto Rican food, because those are my roots. My mom's side is Puerto Rican, my dad's side's Mexican, and then there's Hawaiian incorporated in there too, because the Puerto Rican side of my family, when they migrated to the U.S., they migrated to the Hawaiian Islands first. And so there's a lot of influence there, including like Japanese, Korean, Filipino food, you know, different things. But I like to cook a whole lot of different things. And so my wife loves Mexican food, so I tend to cook a lot of Mexican food, and I play with all kinds of different recipes. So that's one of my favorites. But really, like, probably my most favorite is just like really any kind of a really tasty pasta dish. Like, I love pasta dishes, and it could be, what first got me into that was like Italian pasta, tasting really good Italian pasta for the first time, like that. It was just delicious to me. But, you know, every kid, I don't know, in the U.S. has their spaghetti fix, you know, or their top ramen fix, you know, but pastas are just amazing. But, you know, being able to see what other countries do with pastas is amazing too, you know. A variety of different styles of Asian pastas. You know, I love the vermicelli noodle that Vietnamese folks do. I love pancit, which is Filipino.
So all over the world, huh? You're really open to everything and depending on the situation, but it sounds like food is really big for you.
Oh, I love good food, man.
Yeah.
And I could go on and on about food, man. That was probably the wrong question to ask me.
Hey, so yeah, I'm just happy to have you in the show. And I know we've talked about these things before, but I'm excited to have this conversation with you because I want to hear the language that you use when you talk about it, both for yourself and also when you engage youth. And as you know, a big passion of mine is just the things that are going on around our environment, right? You know that I'm from Peru, and you know that in my hometown, climate change has had a big impact for decades. And that's kind of what drove me to pursue this career in quote-unquote sustainability. And so these things that are happening around the world, my hometown, Mexico, PR, they're everywhere, right? And when I met you, it wasn't necessarily the focus point that I wanted to drive with you. I was just more interested in engaging with you and doing the collaboration we did, right? But I'm curious to know, you know, any initial thoughts you want to share about how you understand these things that I'm talking about, and how is it that you relate or talk about it, or if you do at all? Just curious to know.
A couple things in terms of climate change and just the climate in general. You mm-hmm. know, living in a healthy environment. I work with the population in the community that tends to be the last people that anyone thinks about in terms of living in healthy areas. So they tend to have the dirtiest air. They tend to have the worst roads. They tend to have the least access to whole foods. And so, you know, they're kind of at the bottom of the barrel when it comes to a lot of that. And you think about those that are incarcerated, it's even more so. You know, we're talking about climate change. You know, I'm sure everybody knows about the big fires that have been taking place all along the West Coast. Well, the guys that I work with at McLaren Youth Corrections almost had to be evacuated from their facility because of the Clackamas fire that moved up, you know, just kind of southeast of where they were at, or just really just east of where they were at, and, you know, came pretty close to the Woodburn area, and even close to kind of southeast, kind of Portland and Gresham areas where our a lot of the youth that I work with and families that I work with live. And so, you know, they didn't have to evacuate, but some of them did leave because the air quality was so bad. We had the worst air quality at least in the country, but I think in the world at the moment.
Right.
I mean, we couldn't even go outside of the house. We had to stay inside, and I mean, it was really bad. It was really toxic out. So folks were really kind of staying in. It was kind of weird. It reminded me of the beginning of COVID when all the streets were bare and, you know, folks weren't really getting around too much. So it was a little bit of an eerie feel along with the orange sky. What was kind of interesting is I remember we did a small little breakdance session out in the park that Monday when the winds first started kicking in. And it was weird because as we drove there, you could smell a little bit of the smoke in the air. And we had heard, you know, news about the fires that were taking place and how the smoke was making its way over to Portland. But when we had a big wind storm, it brought a lot here. And that Monday night when we did our little breaking session, it was crazy because it was eerie. The sky became orange and the wind just came barreling through. And I'm over here trying to do some graffiti art, you know, and we were barbecuing and the guys were breakdancing and we were filming it. And it actually turned out to be a really fun little event that we did. But and it was safe, of course, you know, like we got the hand sanitizer and the masks and all that, but and gloves. So it was good, but that was the first night. And then the next day was like a whole nother, I mean, you step out of the house and the smoke was so thick. It was, it was burning your throat, you know? So, but yeah, you know, the populations that we work with tend to be impacted the most, you know?
Even when we begin this conversation, you know, I said, breakdancing, and you picked up on that and you're like, well, let's talk about that real quick. You know, it's breaking. And you gave me like a history behind even the word, right? So language is really important regardless of where you're at. And you yeah. picked up on it really quick. I'm curious to know if you can speak a little bit about language. Like, what would happen if I was to go to the youth that you're engaging with and I was just to start talking, you know, about carbon or IPCC report and just using this slang and language that they may not be familiar with? Like, what does that do to the youth and how does it make them feel?
I think probably you might be, you know, I think that fire that I just talked about made the guys a little bit more aware of the environment, you know, and how like pollution is something that we have to pay attention to. So I noticed that they really started to pay attention to the news reports and they really were wanting to understand things more. So if you were to show up and start talking about that, I think nowadays they would really be interested in, I mean, I think they would be interested in hearing what you have to say anyways, but you know, with the fire being so recent and them, you know, having such a focus on like the air toxicity and what have you, I think they'd be interested in, they would probably be asking you a lot of questions about what that means. You know, they would like to understand a little bit more about that language, you know? So I think that would be really interesting to them, you know? Language in a more broader term, or, well, I mean, we do have guys that speak different languages at the campus. You know, a lot of them speak Spanish. I don't speak Spanish, but I kind of speak what's known as they used to call it galo back in the day, which was like a Pachuco slang. You know, growing up in California, you're really exposed to that, you know, and so I kind of grew up with that, especially my dad he grew up in the Southwest, you know, so that tends to be like a way that my guys and I can communicate, you know, but I also speak with them and we interact in a language of art, you know, whether it's visual art or whether it's through dance, you know, and like when we get into a cipher, you know, when we create a breaking cipher, you know, a circle where we're having an exchange, you're communicating with each other because you're passing ideas back and forth with each other. And you're speaking in a language when you're dancing like that, because it's an interactive and it's an improvisational form of dance, you know? So what I've heard people say is that when you're learning how to breaking is a really difficult dance form to learn. And as you learn it, as you put the time into it, you're basically creating a gift that you're giving to the circle, you know, and everyone brings forth their gift, almost like a potluck, you know, everybody's got their dish to bring forward, you know, and regardless of how simple or how, you know, extravagant the dish may be, it's something that everybody shares and appreciates, you know, just the fact that you took the time to create it and bring it to the table, you know, so it's another form of, it's another version of language. Visual art, I would say, is another form. I mean, any of the arts that we do, you see the drum. Well, you don't. The listeners won't see it, but I got a drum kit behind me, and some. You know, I got a bass guitar. You know, we got. More recently, I've been doing music with the guys at McLaren, which is another form of music and or another language. You know, and what is interesting is that recently I've been working with them on how to communicate with each other as musicians, as opposed to just having their own conversation on their own, you know, cause they're when they're on the unit and they're practicing the guitar or whatever instrument they're interested in, they're trying to understand the language, you know, they're trying to formulate words and phrases and paragraphs so that they can communicate with others, you know, and tell their story through music. Well, what I've been trying to get them to teach them through, I've been teaching them time but I got a grant so that I can, you know, buy some supplies, and I bought a drum kit because I knew that would be the one thing that would tie everything together. We had guys playing bass guitars. We had guys that were playing six string guitars, and we had guys that were rapping and that are wanting to do other forms. But I knew that I could teach them, I could help them evolve with what they're doing if I had a drum there, because that would bring everything together. But what I felt was really important was to teach them how to give a little space for others to be able to communicate as well. Because a lot of times, especially when you have young people who've been traumatized and you give them an opportunity to communicate, mm-hmm. they want to take up, they have a lot to communicate because yeah. they haven't been given that opportunity a lot. So in yeah. this environment, you have to teach them to allow space not only for them to say something, but the others that they're interacting with to say something. And I think what they're finding in that interaction is that it elevates the conversation even more, and it gives them a lot of feeling
so it's a similar language, something to communicate. Yeah.
It's a really gratifying thing, you know, when you're able to have that conversation with others. And I've been seeing just a lot of joy come from them, you know, to be able, not only for their voice to be able to be heard, but them to do it in conjunction with other people, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, with the drum, we've actually been playing some songs together and just kind of jamming and riffing together. And I just see them just open up and they just brighten up. And it's a wonderful feeling. It's my favorite group right now that I've been doing at the facility. And I've really been enjoying it. And like music is not usually what we do, but because of COVID-19 and, and musicians not being able to come into the facility, I just said, well, you know, I know a little something and I'm willing to sit down and teach the guys what I know. You know, I'm definitely no music teacher, but I can at least give them some basics. You know, I played in it before.
So whether it's like Spanish, English, or art, language is really key for the youth to be able to relate to each other and it gives them access to things that they need, right? In these situations, whether it's relationships or would you go as far as saying it gives them a sense of security also amongst their peers?
Yeah, it gives them a lot, actually. It gives them a sense of security. It gives them a sense of camaraderie, a sense of togetherness. It gives them a sense of release, you know, so they get to let go of things that maybe they've been holding on to for a long time. It does a whole lot for them. You know, I mean, on other aspects too, I mean, body language is a whole nother thing that they're really in tune with, mm-hmm. you know, cause they're a lot of times they're taught that, you know, in the environment that they're in, they have to kind of go outside of the boundary sometimes in order to do things, you know, and that can be good or bad, you know, but within that realm, they've been able to learn how to communicate with each other really well through their eyes and through their body language. You know, and with Kalo, there's a lot of that exists too, you know, so, but that's something that they will definitely catch on with really quick, is that they can read your body language and your aura really quickly in there, you know, is because it's like a survival mechanism as well, you know, being able to identify certain,
their like energy and intentions, huh?
Yes. Yep. Exactly.
Wow. Yeah, I can really appreciate that because I think it's important for men to just be more in tune with their body. If we're not in tune with our bodies, we just internalize things and it just becomes something that is not good to hold on to it, right? You know, Bay Area, being a journalist in LA and then going up to the Portland area to do work with youth, those are different roles you've been in. How have you changed and how have you had to adequate to be in these different places and wear these different hats?
Well, it's a humbling experience. You know, I've been fortunate, you know, as a journalist that folks have welcomed me into their community and allowed me to tell their story. As a journalist, what I always tried to do is I tried to be someone who didn't, I didn't want to be like the talking person the whole time. You know, I didn't want to be the person who's telling you what this is about and whatever. All I wanted to do was to kind of paint a picture for folks to enter into other places that I would go to and allow the folks from those communities to tell their own story, you know, because those stories, and when I would do my editing and all that, I wanted to make sure that those stories were told in a way that meant something to the people that I was interacting with, you know, and to appreciate and honor them, you know, basically welcoming me into their home, you know, into their neighborhoods and sharing with me what matters to them. You know, I remember going down to Ramona Gardens, you know, with Hector Verdugo. He's I went there with my friend Adrian, who ran the Chrysalis Project prior. I believe that nonprofit's defunct now, but he introduced me to Hector Verdugo, who is now he's one of the head folks at Homeboy Industries, which is a really important gang prevention program in Los Angeles. And he basically welcomed us into the Ramona Garden area, and he gave me a little tour of the area, and he brought me to a couple of the murals that they had there that they really took a lot of pride in, that the community took a lot of pride in. And he even bought me tacos, street tacos, from some of the older ladies that had a little cart that was in the middle of the projects there. And they basically, that was just how they made another little income, you know. But everybody in the neighborhood knew that's where you'd go to get good tacos, homemade tacos. And we had those there, and it was like a sense of pride for them as well. You know, they're like, well, why do we need to go to these other places to go get tacos? We got the good stuff right here, you know? And yeah. So things like that, you know, just have a lot of meaning, you know? But it's really humbling as well, you know, being in these areas that have been heavily criminalized, and like these people are living in a different experience than anyone, you know? Yeah. I mean, they have such a story to tell. You know,
yeah, and I really enjoy your stories and the language you use, even you mentioning again projects, right? Like that's one term, and to other folks it may be multifamily units and it may be something else. So really appreciate you having you at the show. Would you send a message to youth who may be listening to this podcast? What are your words that you'd like to share with them as they move forward with their day?
Really just allowing yourself to be open. I think it's really important to allow yourself to be open, to try something new, to not be afraid to fail. I think so many young people, especially young people that I work with that are coming from these kind of traumatized and marginalized realms, is that they're afraid of failure because they're afraid that it's they're afraid that they're going to be seen in a certain way, or they're afraid that they're not going to be as good as others or what have you. But like, failure is how you grow, mm-hmm. you know, experiencing those failures is how you gain understanding and how you learn and how you grow and ultimately how you become something better than you, you know, or not, I don't want to say better, but how you improve on your life, you know, your lifestyle, you know, and who you are as an artist, as an individual, as an athlete, as a whatever it is that you are, you know, allow yourself to be humbled, you know, because that's an important thing to be. And, you know, like, don't cut corners, you know, take the time to really learn, to really understand, and to really, you know, when I work with kids that are involved in some form of artistry, I tell them, like, if you want to be a rapper, you know, you're allowed to cut so many corners now, you know, but if you want to have longevity, you need to really hone in and you need to learn and educate yourself on the craft, you know? So that's what's going to allow you to have staying power and for you to be relevant, you know? If you're just going to jump on and try and do something gimmicky because you want to just get paid and be part of that scene, well, you know, you can do that if you want, but you're going to fizzle out and burn out just as quickly as you rose.
Yeah. You know, yeah. So I like that. So you got to really paint the fence, huh? And do it right. Yeah. Carlos, where can folks find out more about you and Morpheus Youth Project and anything else you'd like to share as we wrap up this conversation?
Well, Morpheus Youth Project can be found on, you know, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, just by looking up Morpheus Youth Project. You'll find us there. I've got an IG where I've got some of my artwork and what have you. You can check that out on at Chuco Journal, Chuco like Pachuco, Chuco Journal. That's where I tend to show my artwork. I don't put a whole lot of stuff out, you know, but that's just a way to kind of get myself out there. I haven't really created like much of a personality in terms of an artist, but I do like to share the art that I create and connect with other artists. So that's a good place to find that.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll have those links in the show notes if you're listening in. And if anything, Carlos, as we part ways, I'd be interested to have someone do some artwork for my show. You know, I think it'd be cool to have one of those. I don't know if you've seen any of the icons that I've made, but I tried to do my best attempt at graffiti online. And even cool. Just this image that I'm seeing in your background, like it'd be cool to have like a climate frontline kind of situation over here. That would be cool. Yeah, I would be interested
let's talk, you know, because maybe we can get one of the guys from McLaren to help you put something together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's always good to chat with you and thank you so much for being in the show. This is Carlos Chavez with Morphis Youth Project.
All right, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for tuning in. Before I let you go, I just wanted to say thank you for being here and the messages that I've heard the past week, both from new listeners and folks that have been following me along. Really appreciate that. Be sure to follow the show. We are now on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. So I'm going to leave those links on the show notes. Please follow us or like us there. And if I haven't heard from you, I would just love to hear from you, hear how you're doing, how you're experiencing the show, and if there's any things that have come up for you or lessons you've learned. You can also email me at climatefrontlinepodcast@gmail.com. Okay, I will see you next time. Take care. The communities who are experiencing the worst effects of climate change are those who are best positioned to innovate solutions. Thank you for tuning in and being part of changing the narrative. See you next time at the Climate Frontline.